Welcome to season three of Dealership Process Secrets Podcast. I'm your host, Philip Cheatham, here with my co-hosts, as always, Sterling Brown and Brian Steele. What's happening, guys?
Hey, what's going on, Phil?
Hey, what's going on?
Not much, man. Glad to kick off this third season. Been a little while, so I've done a lot of work. How have you guys been doing?
Good. Enjoyed the break at first. Got a little worried, and then now not so worried anymore.
Nice. Brian, how have you been doing?
Good. Just plugging away, staying busy as usual.
All right. What do you guys want to talk about? Because I would love to talk about desire. We should do a show on that. But we were, you know, there was some sort of Facebook post that came across, right? It was on Facebook. Where is it? I'd like to find it, actually, if we're going to talk about it. I think it's very interesting. It's going to be, I think we should have this conversation. And it's about finance pay plans. This could get pretty in depth. where is it?
But isn't it really about all pay plans, Phil?
We can have that. We can have that conversation. Let's talk about what it is first. Okay. So somebody put a question in an F&I group, and they put question, is it a fair practice to charge our chargebacks against our monthly PBR numbers? Now, when I heard this question, because Brian didn't quite hear what I heard, so I just want to clarify what we're talking about. Because when I heard this question, I had this happen to me in a dealership that I actually worked with Sterling in a long time ago, where they started doing this. And this is basically what they're saying is if you have 2,000, you wrote 2,000 a copy on the 50 deals that you did in March, and now you have $10,000 in chargebacks, and that hits your PVR at 1,800. And let's say you have PVR bonuses at 1,900 and 2,000. Okay, that's what this is talking about, because I'm totally okay with a chargeback hitting your gross. So on that total 100K, you're only going to be paid off at 85K, but you would get bonuses on your PVR because you did run $2,000 a copy. This is where I'm going to stand on it, but I'll read you my comment because I did comment. I don't comment, you know, I comment, I guess a few times a week when I see things that, you know, I think I want to even talk about, basically. But I put, no, it's not right, simply because you cannot expect a human to perform at their best without being able to know how much they are making. This trumps all the other arguments that Brian's about to give me. If the dealer wants to raise the bonus PVR levels or lower the bonuses to make up for it, that's okay. So, I mean, what I'm saying there is basically if you're feeling like you got more chargebacks than you should, you can take a look at the pay plan and you can say, okay, well, you were getting $1,000 for 1,900 a copy. I'm not going to lower your PVR, but that's going to be 500. And you can like raise the bar a little bit. I'd be okay with that. I hate changing their pay plans because they spin out. We can even talk about that. So I don't like changing pay plans in general. You should be able to pull up the number in your dealership. It's that 23% number. I believe in that number, and most dealerships are under it. So if you actually look at this, and this is something else that's important to this conversation, if you're not paying out over 23% of the finance income, and let's say you're paying out 19, 20%, what are you really worried about as a dealer? And we'll get into that. I put this trumps all other arguments. They can lower the bonuses, whatever. If you wanted to change the pay plan, that's okay. But this is the problem with this. As I said, you need to be able to plan deal by deal and know where you are at as a finance manager. It's messy and it's being done by management that doesn't understand the F&I chair. And I said that, and that's a little harsh. And if someone wants to question me on it, that's okay. But I said that because you really don't. I mean, you're basically, if I'm an F&I manager, and I'll lay out my argument here. If I'm an F&I manager and I don't know what my chargebacks are going to be, well, then why am I even watching my numbers? And one of the things that I tell every single F&I manager I've ever trained, and I harp on it with the ones that have listened to me and have not listened to me, especially not listened to me, like, why are you not doing that yet? And what I'm about to say is tracking your numbers personally. And the reasons they'll tell you back is, oh, we track it in five different places, right? The thing is all the people that tell me that back as finance managers, they don't know what their numbers are ever if I ask them right then and there. Like, what's your penetration on this that they're getting picked off in their pay plans, right? What's your penetration on that? What's your average right now? How many deals do you have? What is the size of your next deal need to be to get you to 2,000, or the next two deals have to be to get you to 2,000? You've got to know exactly where you're at. And this is one of the big, that's a professional finance manager knows exactly where right. they are at all times. If you're not doing that, in my eyes, you are not a professional finance manager. How do you possibly not know where you're at going into a deal? You're going to go into a deal. I need to know where I'm at. Okay. So this deal looks like this. I can only sell this much stuff anyway. Okay. But I kind of have to keep my penetration here and do this and blah, 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 blah. And people might people want to go, oh, Phil, you're supposed to sell what the customer wants and this, that, and the other. Yes, we're not even discussing that. You still need to deal plan, know what's in front of you. You're watching the deal being worked on the floor. This is a professional. I look at the six square. I look at the credit. I know about the customer, okay? And I'm deal planning in my mind. Me, I'm deal planning on the deals that haven't even happened yet. Literally, and it's possible with our software, but anyway, so I'm deal planning in the finance office on the deals that haven't even happened yet all the time. Right. And I need to know where I'm at all the time as a professional. If I get a zero right now, what's that going to do to me? What does that mean for the future? And here's another thing. It's not about just selling the customer what they want or anything you want to talk to me about to disagree with what I'm saying, because what I'm saying is 100% accurate. What about getting outside warranties or outside maintenance packages? So I'm calling my previous customers. Well, I need to know if I'm going to need to get four of those or five of those to be at my bonus levels. Okay. If I'm working my pay plan properly. Okay. So if I can't sell this next customer that, I need to know that, right? You need to know it. That's a professional. So I hope I got my point across on that. So if I'm that professional and then I don't know what my chargebacks are going to be at the end of the month, and I don't know what I'm making, it's like, that's a brain disaster. I mean, how do you not know what you're going to make and you're working that hard and you are monitoring what you're doing and pushing that extra inch? I'll get into another real reason you want to track your numbers, and it goes into a totally different conversation, which is take the money from the customers that are giving it to you. And this is one of the biggest things we tend to do in finance, where we actually do it on the floor too. So if we go out there asking people for 30% down payment, right? Or we have a customer in the finance office that is going to say to us, oh yeah, I'll take all of that stuff, right? And then you're like, oh, they're so nice, I'm going to give them 500 off a gap, right? Or you have the customer that you're asking 30% down on the floor for all the time, and 90% of your customers are saying they got a grand or 2 grand. And one customer goes, well, I don't have that 12 grand, but I got 11. And you just run to the sales desk, I got 11 grand. That's the easiest customer to go, are you sure you don't have the 12? And they're going to give it to you right there, right? The customer that you discounted the finance product to, that you didn't need to because they were nice and buying stuff from you. If you're tracking your numbers and know where you're at, you'll probably never do that. And honestly, the philosophy is you need to take the money from the customers that are going to give it to you and are willing to give it to you, because the more money we bring into our dealership that way, the more I actually have availability to sell something to somebody making no money and put a credit challenge person into a vehicle or a motorcycle, right? So the more people I take the money from, the more ability I have to actually dig deep on somebody that might not even have been willing to buy, right? So if I'm not deal planning and I'm not monitoring my numbers at all times, knowing exactly where I am, I can't do any of that. I don't know that. I don't know these things, right? And if I'm not doing that, or then you come along and tell me that, you don't know, maybe my chargebacks are 30 grand, maybe my chargebacks are 10 grand. You have no clue, right? And 1 month they hit you with 30 grand and knocks you out of all your bonuses and you make 5 grand. You think that's good. Now your person that was a professional is no longer a professional, because why would I even track my numbers or know where I'm at if I don't know where I'm going to end up at? Right.
Right.
So that's my argument. We probably got another 12 minutes. I took up about 8 for you guys to kind of beat it out.
Who wants to? I had a thought. I like to try to pride myself on thinking outside the box. And it's actually something that I've made a conscious effort after more and more conversations with Phil. And thinking outside the box just means you're providing your staff, your employees with more opportunity. So what this is it's a problem. And what a problem is it's an opportunity. So instead of figuring out how can I punish my people when there's this opportunity or a problem, if you have a positive framing mindset, you can say, how can I reward my employee who's doing the best, right? So if Phil, Brian, and myself are a finance department, one of us has the least amount of chargebacks. So if you want to reward your staff instead of punish your staff, how about you reward your finance person who has the least amount of chargebacks month in and month out? That's a great way to positively reinforce doing the right thing. I'm not afraid of being wrong. So tell me if you think there's something goofy about that.
I don't hate it as it went through my head. I also don't think you need to do it. If you're running your department the right way, and we were going to get into something else Brian was talking about, but you know, a good finance manager is not going to shoot themselves in the foot. And we all know the finance manager about 30 days later, that's selling things that the customer doesn't know about or telling them they can cancel it and they're actually canceling it. And that's a big portion right there, because I've heard people get upset about, oh, are they telling them that they can cancel it? And it's like, well, that's actually a feature of the warranty is that you can cancel it. So, but it's all about how, you disclose that to the customer, and it's all on your individual results. Is what you're saying causing your customers to cancel is what matters. Not if they're telling the customer that they can cancel. That's a whole other discussion in itself that I've been down a few times. Because if they're telling the customer that and they're not canceling, I don't care. Right. What do you guys think about that?
Yeah, absolutely. But there's a little bit more risk involved with that. You know,
well, when you try to dictate to somebody what features they're going to go over with the product, you're asking them to be the professional in your store is selling. And then I want to hear how you're saying it maybe, and then talk to you about it. And we can go into that. But it's a feature of the warranty, and it's a disclosure. And in certain situations, you're going to use that money as down payment, and or on the deal you're using their old cancelables as down payment, right? So it's something I do like to talk about. And if you talk about it the right way, it definitely is not going to cause people to just randomly cancel things, unless you do get those people that like want money and think they can cancel their gap and stuff like that.
I've heard you reference the cancellation, and I think you're one of the few people that do it right. I've heard more people do it wrong. So that's why I'm coming from it from a perspective of, okay, something needs to be done, I think, right? This is a risk reward. People need to be able to go over the cancellation policy, but they also need to be aware of the potential consequences. So that's why I just try to flip it on its head, turn a negative into a positive, reward the people like you and other people that I know, Brian as well, that do a good job of letting you know it's a benefit, but not making it the main benefit, which of course can cause those repercussions.
I mean, in my process, I would never, it doesn't get brought up at all. Until you get to like the third or fourth column on the menu and you're going back and forth with the customer. Right. And then that's when really the reason that you get paid six figures in the finance office exists is those conversations on that third box of the menu. Now, what I do is I create a process that makes it much easier to catch people on the first and the second and the third box. A yes, without going into that negotiation territory. That's one of my biggest things that I like to do. And I also like to highlight the point that you didn't really do much at that point. Right. And we're so proud of the $7,000 or the whatever 10 products or whatever the hell it is deals. I'm more proud of you getting, you know, $1,000 out of that cash customer that never bought anything in your store on the last seven purchases. Right. Or even $200 out of the guy and just getting him to buy something. I'm way more proud of that. So, but going into, I guess, talking about the cancellations, we were talking about pay plans. I haven't heard from Brian. I guess let's go back to the pay plan conversation.
Well, I'm happy to jump in whenever you want, but we just kind of went in a few different directions. I'm just trying to follow along. I had some comments on the original conversation.
Just give us your comments and thoughts, Brian.
So, you know, when Phil and I first started talking about this, or when the three of us first started talking about it, you know, Phil's right. I hadn't read the post, and I went back to a prior conversation that Phil and I had, where I, you know, off the cuff gave an opinion on a pay plan without knowing all the details. And, you know, Phil kind of got on me about that. And I thought that was really fair.
Oh, I remember that. Like, some guy posts their pay plan on Facebook, dude. And it's like, am I getting ripped off or not? And it literally just shows his pay sheet. And I'm like, there's not enough information here. And I start reading the comments and all these people are like, oh yeah, quit your job. Oh yeah, that sucks. And I was like, man, why are people saying this? Like, I need to know how many, I need to know how many salesperson people, like, right. There's so many more factors at play. Right. And then I get to like the sixth comment, Sterling, and it's Brian going, yeah, that sucks.
Yeah. I'm jumping with Ian Wagner down there, you know, but his job too. So what I will say is I'm against blanketed comments about pay plans. You just can't have one. It's like trying to build a triangle without that extra degree or whatever. You know, you don't know where it meets in the middle and finds a balance. But, you know, you can throw out percentages. You can say, you know, oh, I get 30% of the back end. Well, you can throw that out, but you're not throwing out that the GM's also packing those service contracts, because back end products get packed just like cars. You know, the GM could be packing
Not at all stores. Most stores have a pack. Oh yeah, I know it happens. I had different costs with the same manufacturer, you know, different stores. So, I know that. One interesting thing I think that we were kind of talking about was just like, because the whole thing to me, I think the same management that would decide to do that with the finance pay plan is also the same type of management that's worried about having like penetration bonuses and them short selling it, right? And I think you're stepping over the quarters to pick up the pennies. You're worried about you know, basically like which nutrients your plants are using to grow versus the fact that they're growing. Like if you step back and you look at the big picture about being worried about either one, short selling, and or some, cause you guys don't want to short sell, they get paid on the gross, right? So if they short sell to get their penetration, you have to think about the bigger picture of the customer being protected. If it's a maintenance plan coming back to your dealership. I don't like short selling the maintenance plans, the warranties. If you're short selling a warranty, you're still getting that penetration with the manufacturer. You're getting this. So it's like, you're kind of just passing on what the manufacturer is giving you to your guy, and he's not getting paid on profit because he didn't make any profit. Right. So I like penetration pay plans, and I don't mind the short selling. And I think you're short-sighted when you do mind that. And I think you're very short-sighted, and you're not going to have professional F&I in your dealership if they don't know what they're getting paid, or if you have PVR bonuses that they want to,
or how they're getting paid. And like, I think, you know, from the management side, I would say find an incentive that seems to get the result for the values that you care about, or that, you know, make sure that the pay plan aligns with what you're really trying to accomplish. You know, if it's total overall growth,
and then listen to your people, because this is the thing that we tend to do from that chair is, oh no, of course that should lower their PVR. That makes sense. And if they don't like it, fuck them. Right. And, that's pretty much the attitude. And if you don't listen to your professional, that's going to come in and tell you, look, now I don't know how I'm getting paid, and they're going to be emotional. So they're not going to present it the way I do. Right. They're going to get upset or whatever, but there's a real deal there where if you're paying me on a PVR bonus, okay, I have to be at a certain level to get any type of money at all. And then I never am going to know what my chargebacks are. And then I never going to know where my PVR is going to land at the end of the month based off those chargebacks. I am not a professional anymore. So if I want to continue to be a professional, I'm either going to leave your store or you're going to have somebody with the capacity and abilities to be a professional who's not operating as a professional anymore. That's my entire point on that pay plan. You can't do it, unfortunately.
Well, I think far too often, this is the visual that I'd like to give anybody that's like trying to renegotiate a pay plan or come up with a different pay plan, is you're playing Jenga with someone's paycheck. It's like, you know, you just, oh, what if we move this out of here and then set it up here? And then what if we, you know, eventually it's going to come crashing down and like
these I only like to add things. Unfortunately, when you're doing staff rearrangement, like I just did, with the product specialist system and putting people in a different position, you can't pay the product specialist on all the gross anymore. And you need to pay two people on the proper process. So, I had to do that, recently. but I promoted people that are going to now make six figures, basically you get paid properly and your job makes more sense as a product specialist, hey, or a fit specialist, in Harley. Hey, I'm getting paid. I know what I'm doing. Step one through five to get to the sit down, and I'm being paid on volume. Mostly it's volume weighted. And then the person holding the gross, they're paid on gross. And then you have two people, one person that's set out basically to do volume against this other person's that's going to make sure that they're going to hold the gross much deeper than that. I've had to unfortunately change pay plans. I don't like to take things out, but then, you know, you got a finance director pay plan, right? Let's say, and they're being paid off the front end and not off their people. Seen that.
Yeah.
How does that make sense? So I need to take that out and put that in. So when I see some crazy, weird freaking pay plans, man. And, so I've seen many pay plans that I go, well, I would have never written that pay plan that way, but unfortunately this person's really valuable and, you can't change it now. You know, I've seen many pay plans where I've said that. So there's so many different factors here. And people write some weird pay plans that make no sense, and they're incentivizing people and stuff that makes no sense. Finance, another one that I think I've talked about this before, but this happens. It's very common where, oh, all this guy's doing is selling the front end product all the time. And I go, let me see the pay plan. And I go, you wrote a pay plan that told him to do that. You're paying him a higher percentage. Oh, right. So, I mean,
you got to create a plan that has the least amount of fudgery, because there will always be fudgery, but you know, like they're going to work the pay plan. But I think that there's kind of two conversations.
Well, that's why you want to write a pay plan that you want them to work. So that's why you want to write a pay plan that creates leverage for you to get them to do what you want them to do. If you want them to do volume, if you want them to do volume, you don't pay them on all the gross. Because if you pay them on all the gross, they can sell three cars and go home. Like, you got to think. When you're talking about, and this is the thing, when I look at pay plans, I'm like, so you want them to do this, right? Well, the pay plan has them do this. And that's a perfect example that's out there. And some salespeople probably hate me hearing me say this, but you know, here's, at the end of the day, you're going to adapt to a change if that did come for you. And the only reason that change would be made would be better for the dealership and better for everybody. And when you stick around, you make more money. It's just a little, you're being asked to do something different, which is sell volume, right? So those, the worst pay plans I see out there are the salespeople pay plans that are just so gross weighted with no volume bonuses. And if you're not a volume dealership in 2022, or you're not trying to be a volume dealership in 2022, in my opinion, you're out of your mind. Like, you just don't get it. So, anyway.
But I think that there's a couple of conversations we should try to flesh out when it comes to pay plan. One is, it's from the management side. too, is from the salesperson side, like, you know, to just loosely just throw out, hey, man, am I getting screwed here? And then everybody jumps on the bandwagon. You have to really look at the whole picture. You could say, well, these people are willing to pay me 30% of the gross, but you get over there and then they give you no leads. Or you go to another place and they're willing to, you know, give you 20% of the gross and give you 200 leads a month. Like, you really have to look at the full.
Oh, yeah, I got offered a pay plan one time when I was in finance that was like three times what my pay plan was, but I knew they didn't sell any cars, so it didn't matter.
Right. So, like, when we're talking about pay plans, you gotta, like, if you're the one crafting it, you gotta come up with something that, you know, gets you the intended result. And then, you know, don't make it so exotic that it's hard for people to understand, because then you're going to miss the boat entirely because people won't work it because they don't understand it. And then if you're the person on the other side of that pay plan, you know, try to look at the full picture or the full package before you make a knee-jerk response, because how many times have we seen it that change comes and we've all seen change happen. And I kind of feel like it's like that grief cycle where, first, you get angry about it. Two, you're in denial about it. Three, you try to barter about it. And then, you know, you accept it, then you recover, and everybody moves on. But anytime change comes, people, like, freak out, and you really do need to, you know, take the time to look at the full package rather than
I like to write
a number here or a
number there. I like pay plans, and I like to write pay plans that not only get people to do what I want them to do, but they also get them to get the most out of that person. Right.
Right.
So you also get the hardest work ethic out of that person. And there's a line there. You don't want people freaking, you know, dropping dead of heart attacks on the last day of the month, trying, you know what I mean? Which we do. Right. But, there's a small line there, and it's kind of what we just talked about on this podcast in finance, which is, if you're doing that to your F&I, you haven't sat in that chair. They now don't know how they're going to make their money, so they're no longer a professional. It's that simple. So we've talked about that. But I like the pay plan, basically, man, is to get the most out of that person, right? And at the end of the day, that's what you want your job to do, is to pull the most out of you and get the most out of you. Because if I get the most out of you, then you're going to grow and become a better version of you faster. Right. So it's volume number one. If you're not going after these old school stores make me laugh so hard that just only are still for gross and they don't want to do volume. It's like the volume dealership's doing just as many gross deals as you are. They're just then selling a whole bunch more cars, so they have a better allocation and more customers and more service. It's like, what are you thinking?
But morale's up, and it doesn't feel like a morgue in there. And
yeah.
And you know, yeah.
So
you're having fun.
But on the pay plan, final notes on the pay plan is, I like pay plans to one, you know, get the person to do what I want them to do, and two, make them do as much as I can possibly get out of that person, because, and not kill the person, but make them, while they're in the dealership at work, working, work and utilize their skill sets and get their skill sets better. That's what I want my pay plan to incentivize and to do, is to keep them busy, keep them working, keep them getting better. And you know, I love people to make tons of money too. So, that's pretty much all I got.
Yeah. If you want an interesting exercise, I'll challenge people, listeners, to do this. If you want an interesting exercise, go ask someone to explain their pay plan to you. And if they don't understand it, you got a major problem.
I like that. Yeah, I like that.
Because then you're not getting, just like you said early in like the recap, you know, get the pay plan to do what you intend it to do. And if they don't understand it, that incentive aspect of it is gone.
Yep. I put a I put a bonus on a pay plan for F&I last June, and none of them thought they were going to hit it. And two out of three of them just hit all of them, every bonus, the penetration bonuses and the PVR bonuses, last month for the first time. They'd hit some of them, like pieces of them, but they hit two of them hit every last bonus last month. So that's cool to share as well. I like adding things to pay plans. Yeah, I like adding things to pay plans, man. And I like teaching people how to actually hit it, man. Like that's the gold. Mm-hmm. And now, and you know, going from freaking making 9, 10, 11 grand to your finance manager making 20 grand and you're completely okay with it because they're producing way more than you thought they would. So that's where the gold is. All right. I think we're going to call it on that one. Thank you everybody for listening. Have a great night. Thank you, Sterling. Thank you, Brian.